honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing just a few of the stories from the legendary aviation career of Bill Gillette, 100 years old, of San Jose, California. Originally from Kansas, he told us he went from farming with horses to harnessing the horsepower of a P-51 Mustang. For 59 missions with the 4th Fighter Group in Europe in World War II, he shared some stories about some of his group's legendary aces, but I'm sure you want to hear about some of Bill's most harrowing moments. We're going to get to the day he shot down two German planes on the same mission. But first, Bill, I want to hear about this flight in which the only bullets flying through a hole in your wing were from your own plane.
I'm on a test flight. Deacon Hively became squad commander after Mike Sabansky was shot down on D-Day. Came to me and says, oh, there's two engines to a P-51. The superchargers are different, so the -3 engine would go 4,000 or 5,000 feet higher. It would go to 40,000 feet. He says, I want 4 airplanes. I want you to be one of them. I want them to have a high-altitude engine. And so when these guys come over like this and tease us, we can go up. So they got me in a fairly new airplane, somebody hand down. But they had the wrong engine, so they put a new engine in it. And I'm to fly it. Now tomorrow's the day. So they came to me and said, this airplane needs a test hop. It's had an engine change, and we can't let it go. And it's evening time. I mean, it's liable to be dark for it, you know. So you have to go up and test the supercharger, and its altitudes are critical. So I went up to 24,000 feet someplace in there. The other one, the supercharger, automatic. You could manually turn it on, but the other one was somewhat lower, and I was all in how they were geared. So I went up to 24,000 feet. This is going to be my airplane. I'd like the airplane to be smooth. Airplanes tell you a lot of things about how they're flying. They say, turn a little more right rudder. I'm going too fast. I'm going too slow. I mean, and you have to learn what this airplane is telling you. So if it'll go 350 miles an hour and it's not any buffets, so I pointed the airplane back toward home. And I was looking around. So I thought, gee, this airplane there is 350. And I looked out here, and here's a little rectangular hole in the top of the right wing. I looked over, and an ammunition flying out. And I looked over at the other wing at the same panel. And it went like this, bowed, lifted up vertical here, and took the left horizontal stabilizer off. So I have no elevator. And this is a new experience, too. So I thought, I got to get out and walk. So I bailed out. I have no idea, probably not four I needed to, as I watched, because I looked at the, did I bail out of an airplane? Four I should have, you know, because it was drifting around. Well, no, I didn't, because these pieces were found on the ground. I landed, a parachute was a cricket field, I think, and a railroad ran along the side of the wind. So my parachute, I went under the wires along the railroad. Parachute went over the top, and I'm hanging there in the railroad about 5 or 6 feet off the ground.
Because the wires got your chute?
Yeah, the wires got the chute. And I thought, now what do I do? It's quite a drop, you know. Well, Bobby, which is an armed police in England, didn't carry weapons in. Bobby came in his car and helped me down. I don't know whether I had gotten down or not. Got the parachute off the wires. Took me to a U.S. Air Force hospital for a physical. And took me back. But that was a totally new experience. I had black eyes. I must have been doing 300 miles an hour when I bailed out. Well, what my crew chief didn't tell me before I got in the airplane is the doors for the ammunition troughs for the guns had an old pretty rough style fastener. They had Zeus screws that stuck up. Well, they changed this panel and changed the fastening or something. The next morning, somebody said, you were second. There's a test pilot had the same thing happen yesterday in the United States. So I don't know, and they never told me what they did. It was like it was classified information. And maybe needed to be, because any report of speed limits would give the Germans more knowledge.
Yeah, because you didn't want the enemy to know of these newfound capabilities. You were hoping to catch them by surprise with your increased speed and range.
Yes, yes. And their speeds were, say, the difference between 400, which I had been to a time or two before, now 350 wouldn't cut it. You wouldn't get away, or you wouldn't catch whichever end of that you were on. If you disabled your airplane, you were in Germany, so you were sure going to be a guest of the German.
Well, and just so I'm clear and understand what happened, you're saying you basically shot yourself down because these ammunition holds were not secure. The stuff started flying out, yeah, and it's what destroyed your wings.
And the air flowing over this hole created some kind of suction. And here's 50 caliber shells streaming out. They're on a chain, and they're blowing out into the air. So it didn't get the right stabilizer. But the left one, and I sat around and thought, I wonder if I'd jerked a wheel, some changed the pitch attitude of the airplane, something if I'd have gotten by and brought the airplane home with two holes, and they'd have been able to study whatever remained. I never heard what they did, but I'm sure this is the beginning of a new series of repairing and beefing up, like when I put the third gun in the P-51, then the wing started breaking just outside the third gun, and they had to re-strengthen that some way and something like that. So I know it went through those two things after I was in combat.
Well, and I think that's an aspect of this that we probably don't think about or talk about enough. I mean, I always think of test pilots as guinea pigs, but you're really underscoring that nobody really knew how any of this was going to work, and the way you learned was a lot of times paying with guys' lives.
Well, that's right. I mean, if the other airplane is doing better, you don't give up, and then so now you find out how the weak, and you get out in the corners when you're in training. You always stay inside the little envelope and turn this way and turn to, and don't turn beyond this. When I was, first few days I was flying, they say, you got to turn tighter, you got to react quicker, you got to do this, you got to know what that airplane's got. It's got to tell you when it's about to stall. It's got to tell you when it's about to break. I went out and practiced until I could make a 6G, 180 degree level turn and roll out with my gun sight on something. 6Gs is pretty. If the airplane won't stand 6Gs, you find out in practice area, yeah. Those kind of things. And it's the same way. So you get out in the corners, you're forced to outdo these people. They're not allowed to outdo me, you know, yeah. And kind of thing. So part of that is trying to anticipate. And I have gone out with my own squadron mates, come back wet. There was sweat down to my belt from the maneuvering the airplane around the sky.
Not from nerves, but from exertion.
Exertion, yes. Yeah, that's before G-suits said you would black out, so you had to learn to yell and tense your body so the blood didn't clear. And you could see that happening. It starts turning dark, you know. So when that gets just above your cowling, then you ease off.
Okay, so we got to talk about this a little more, because you're saying this like it's no big deal, and I don't want people to miss this, because again, talk about something we've never done. You're saying before you had the G-suits, you would start to see your consciousness fading, and kind of like a screen or an iris on a camera, it's getting dark all the way to about your eye level, and that's when you need to pull out?
That's right, and you need to have developed the gentle change, not move the control, which is release the pressure that you're pulling kind of a technique, because you can be too rough with the airplane at this time and damage and, you know, all of those things generally slowly get put into your system.
Isn't that scary, though?
I don't know. I didn't think of that way. I got to know what this airplane will do and not kill myself. An airplane flies a lot like a bicycle. It can't turn without banking. Most of my victories were involved in turning, And you get close enough, and then they'll see you in turn or whatever. I don't think any one or two maybe was straight on. Where, oh, there's a guy flying, and bang. And if you're close to clouds, people come in and out of clouds. I mean, you just can't avoid, if a puffy cloud is there, you just can't avoid, or you can't do things to avoid the cloud. One mission might be absolutely just fly around. The next mission, there'll be 100 airplanes up there.
Well, and you say sometimes there's 100 airplanes in the sky, and I understand that's the way it was on a day when you got two of your confirmed kills?
Yes, yes. There was two groups of Germans, one on each side, the big one on the, and the bomber in between was about 70, 80 bombers.
So 80 American bombers.
80 American bombers, and probably I would guess 50 Germans behind, kind of behind me, I had to turn because people behind you can shoot you and you have no defense. And besides, if I shoot at them, they're the enemy. You disrupt their formation pattern of firepower. So you go head through them. So our tactic generally was to get between the Germans and the bombers and then at some appropriate time, turn.
So you turn right into this wall of German fighters.
Yes. The lead is going, you can see smoke and all the guns.
So you have 50 German fighters over here and another group of German fighters over there, and you're trying to protect these bombers. How'd you get those two, and how do you remember that unfolding?
In the maneuvering around, there's suddenly an airplane right there. Just go. I mean, your thumb's on the trigger, and both of them happened to the flying led us together. One, there was a little film of clouds, and he almost went out of sight, but then a bunch of garbage came out of the cloud.
Well, what does that feel like when you're flying your P-51 straight at more German fighters than you can count?
Well, I had confidence. Probably I don't remember exactly. You know, it's been 70 years. But all I had to do was hit the airplane some, and then that made him change his tactics. But I never got close enough to be mid-air worried, I don't believe, with enemy. Strafing is a different thing because the trees are fixed and the objects you strafe through and stuff like that. Strafing an aerodrome, you play around in the treetops and you go out and go behind a tree so the gunner can't see you over there. And then you go up to where you can see and down and plan each. So you went this way. Go this way the next time.
So that was more nerve-wracking for you than air-to-air combat?
Yes. It was more than you. Jim Goodson, he was a strafer. Me, and he got shot down strafing. I was on that mission and talking to him on the radio. Don't go across that airport, Goody. I've been across it 3 times. And they're ready. I'm leaving. And anyway, he said, well, one pass. And they got him. I was kind of taken when Goody got shot down that day because I felt like if he'd listened to me, he'd have talked a bit, he might not have gone across the airport or something. I think Goody was there. But Blakesley and these guys all had an attitude, and I tried to fit, I think, that attitude. I was proud to be good enough to have been kept. Blakesley, if I wasn't good enough, he'd get rid of you like that. So it was an accomplishment to me to say that I was a member of the 4th Fighter Group. And when I went there, they were leading the number of kills in World War II, and they ended up with 1,000 and something destroyed. That was World War II's biggest American outfit shooting down German airplanes. All through England, Hubzemke and his wolf pack and stuff, and he and Blakesley were kind of like that.
They were rivals?
Yeah, and Blakesley made, and the 4th Fighter Group made an attempt to not let the wolf pack get ahead of them. We could read intelligence reports, and the intelligence man comes out and said, they got 4 on the way home after the escort, so we got to get 4 today.
And those two both ended up as prisoners of war, Zemke and Gabreski, so maybe that's what allowed you guys to pass them?
Well, the leader, there was some leader we got when Blakesley left, and they took him off because they didn't want him. And I don't think they won the other two guys, but the shock of them getting shot down, they sent Blakesley home. There's rumors that they're going to decide that he's too valuable an asset to be lost as a prisoner, and they're just going to have to replace him. And besides, physically, we aren't sure. There's some breaking place for almost everybody. I never got a bullet hole in my airplane while I was flying it. Another pilot flying my airplane, one of them escorted his bombs into the target, which is not recommended. Another guy landed 50 or 60 feet in the air and made it all up. And another guy come in, so I'm now on my fourth airplane. I said, "How's my airplane?" He says, "Your oxygen system is all messed up." "What?" So I go running out to my airplane. I said, "What's going on, Sergeant? See that little hole? There's a hole in the side of the cockpit, and there's a hole in the other side." And then he later told me, they got the pilot back in, and they couldn't stick a dowel through the two holes that ran into his tummy. So we figured he's pulling G's, he's doing something, and so you're all pushed out of shape. But that's how close he came to getting a bullet in his stomach. And it had hit the oxygen tube, which went through right up your front and up to the mask.
What would you say that personally, with regard to your years in the service, what are you most proud of?
Probably this tour, knowing these guys and being able to walk in and sit down and say, "Hi, Jim," and being treated like what I thought was an equal and not, "You're a newcomer." Mm-hmm. And I know some of them didn't get that treatment. And I thought, gee, they act like, you know, it's okay for me to be here. But I think the single most thing is the fact that I developed good enough flying abilities to live with these guys in a time when the war was hectic. 6 weeks or something like that before I joined the 4th Fighter Group of them. They shot down 300 German airplanes. They lost 55. And that's the reason they needed replacements. So there. The second is I have 4 kids. All of them have college degrees. All of them are retired now or next to retiring. And they're financially doing well. And 3 of them are in education. Their mom was a school teacher, and they all in the school. The middle one was administration at Santa Clara University. And the other one is in Hawaii. She's a school teacher, high school teacher, and my oldest one was a speech therapist in San Jose area. And my son went to the Air Force Academy.
Do you ever look at your 59 missions and say, "How did I get through all those? How am I still here?"
Several of them. D-Day, for instance, we lost 10 pilots. I didn't see a German airplane. The other part is these guys that were lost had strayed from our original area. I don't know whether that was good or bad, but I keep thinking, Colonel Don said to guard this place, so I stay here and guard it and stuff like that. And I tried not to think about that part. And I think some of the guys are the same way. Well, this is what I'm going to do. And especially these guys who were getting even, you know. I mean, all of these guys had some gripe. Blakesley and all of those guys, some gripe against Hitler that they were settling personally. I had no idea what I was going to do until I just followed these guys. And I presume God gave me the ability to fly and see some of these things that others didn't, or I'd have made mistakes that others made.
You said God gave you the ability. Did you ever feel like God was protecting you up there?
Yes. And it would not be uncommon for somebody in briefing in the intelligence room to say, "God, I know where I am. I can get home, go help somebody else." I mean, other guys, it's the same way, I think. Well, they can feel that way, I can feel that way. And that had been a wondering point for me as we were doing this flying. My going to church and being a Christian, what's that going to do? How's the war going to look at this or anything? And other guys, I mean, I was amazed when I was sitting there and we were talking about something. And Shoki or somebody said, I just up and said, "God, I could see England. Go help somebody else for a while."
Well, and you're 100 years old now, but you're still driving and you're still golfing. A lot easier to shoot your age when you're 100, I'm sure. What keeps you going? What's your secret?
Well, part of it is I try to keep going. there are days when I think, gosh, I don't even want to get out of bed. Good genes, I'm sure, are part of it. My dad had two sisters who lived past 100. Beyond that, I don't know. But I think there is a supreme being. I don't know when we're getting to be so many of us how he can take care of everybody anymore.
Well, aren't we thankful he's still taking care of Bill Gillette, 100 years old and closing in on 101. As you might imagine, with such a distinguished career, Bill had a few stories that wouldn't quite fit into our radio time today, but I do have them bonused in for you as part of the podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find some photos of this amazing aviator. One more note, you may have noticed we have a new sponsor helping to make this program possible. I'm very excited to partner with the U.S. Army, and of course we're thankful for our men and women in uniform today, who, just like those we hear from on this program, are willing to put their lives on the line for the rest of us. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.